My guest at this time is retired U.S. Army Colonel Alan West. He is also a former Republican congressman from Florida and is now the president and CEO of the National Center for Policy Analysis. We want to get his insights on how to confront and defeat ISIS and the returning gun debate in the wake of the San Bernardino terrorist attacks. And Colonel West, thanks very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, sir. President Obama, of course, delivered a televised address to the nation on Sunday night. When it came to the strategy against ISIS, he essentially said, we're doing the right thing. We're going to continue the air campaign as we're doing it. We're going to keep training people in the region to confront ISIS. We're going to keep working with our allies to disrupt plots. He said things might intensify in some of those areas as a result of what we've seen. But essentially, we're staying the course. What was your reaction to that?
Well, in staying the course, I think that that's the pure definition, as Albert Einstein said, the insanity is continuing to do the same thing and expecting different results. You know, this vaunted air campaign is anything but anemic in and of itself. It started back in August of last year, and we still have a very strong and viable ISIS that is rooted there in Raqqa. They still own terrain. We continue to see ISIS conducting daytime parades through cities that they had taken over, that lets us know that that air campaign is not being successful. And we know that pilots have said that 70 to 75% of their ordnance has not been dropped because of the very restrictive rules of engagement that has been placed upon them. The development of alliances, sure, but those alliances are seemingly to me just paper in nature. And when you talk about ISIS, look at the fact that they've been able to conduct attacks, command and control attacks outside of the areas that they control of Iraq and Syria, in Beirut, Lebanon, with the car bombings and suicide bombings attacks there, the attack that brought down the Russian, well, the Egyptian airliner, killing 224 Russian civilians, and then, of course, what we saw in Paris. And we know that there is a connection going on. As a matter of fact, we just found out about a Somali American that was arrested in Minneapolis for recruiting individuals for ISIS, and we don't know the folks in San Bernardino who they were talking to online and through chat rooms. Hopefully, with the equipment that they've uncovered, we can get a better electronic and digital signature.
We're talking with retired U.S. Army Colonel Alan West, and you've mentioned some of the things you think we can do better. You served in Iraq twice, in the Gulf War and in Operation Iraqi Freedom. Mm-hmm. Iraq and Syria have so many different competing factions, so even if tactically and diplomatically we do the right things, how stable can we expect this region to be?
Well, without a doubt, I think that you're starting to see a little bit of the breakup of the Sykes-Picot agreement back after World War I. And that's why I think we have a great opportunity to reestablish ourselves in relationships between the Kurds, with the Egyptians, with the Jordanians, with the Sunnis who want to live with peace and stability and that reject this Islamic terrorism and jihadism. And that's what we must do. But instead, what we see through this administration is an acquiescence to Iran, to be the regional hegemon there, and also to Turkey, who is seeking to be a hegemon in and of itself. And without a doubt, they've been in collusion with ISIS, allowing the transfer of oil shipments and men and materiel to go back and forth across the border, and then also supporting those Islamist groups that are trying to destabilize the country of Syria. So I think that right now, if we showed leadership and not the abandonment, not the void that we created, we could step up and we could have ISIS quickly defeated. Right now, I think that you do have the impetus behind a global coalition, but someone has to step forward and be the leader. I don't want to see Vladimir Putin and Russia be that, but they have put themselves on the ground right in the middle of this in Syria. But they're going to protect their own interests first and foremost.
Let's talk briefly about rules of engagement. That's been something that has been frustrating to, I know, a lot of people. One is that our pilots are often coming back without dropping any munitions, mm-hmm. because there's the possibility of a civilian casualty. There's also been reports that the oil fields, which are financing ISIS, have largely been left alone because of concerns over environmental damage if those mm-hmm. wells get destroyed. What's your reaction to that?
Well, you know, I remember being back in Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and we sat and watched those oil wells that were set afire by the by Saddam Hussein and the Iraqi army. But what we did was we quickly went in there, and with the expertise that we had in the oil and natural gas industry here in America, we saw that issue. So to say that we're not going to attack a major funding source for ISIS because we're worried about environmental considerations, that falls in line with a president that believes that climate change is the greatest threat to global security. To drop leaflets for drivers who are driving these trucks to give them the opportunity to run away, they're not civilians. Those are people that are supporting ISIS in every way, shape, and form. So we should be engaging these targets. We should be taking away that funding stream and revenue source that they have. And we should also find out the entities that are purchasing the oil resource and providing revenue to ISIS and put economic sanctions on them.
Colonel, one of the more disturbing revelations out of San Bernardino is that the wife in this case, Malik, appears to have been radicalized well before she applied for and was granted permission to come to the U.S., and that's obviously stirred a lot of debate in the last few days. You've got Donald Trump, of course, proposing a temporary ban on all Muslim immigration. You've got Rand Paul pushing a ban on immigration from countries where radicalism poses some of the biggest threats. Congress is working this week to tighten up the visa waiver program. What do you believe is the best way to prevent radicals from even getting to U.S. soil?
The first thing is, you know, this program that I had no idea about, this visa, fiancé visa program, we probably need to put a kibosh on it for right now. Definitely, you know, do better in monitoring it. The fact that Tashim Malik was able to put down an address that was not verified and was a false address, that's very disconcerting for me. But when we look at the terror watch list, we look at all of those countries, and we also look at countries where Islamic jihadist groups are occupying terrain. First and foremost, we should say the United States is going to restrict the entry of military-age single males, and now I think we have to look at military-age single females from entry to the United States of America. We have to make it relevant to what we have seen occurring on this new 21st century battlefield. We know that ISIS has said that it's going to seek to infiltrate groups of quote-unquote refugees. I call them displaced persons, and that has been proven in Paris. So I think that that is where we start, and I believe that that's a very simple fix that we can put in that no one should be able to disagree with.
Let's shift to guns now, Colonel West. President Obama and many other Democrats are also saying this terrorist attack shows it is time for what they call common sense gun legislation. Specifically, in his address on Sunday, the president called for anyone currently on the no-fly list to be banned from buying a gun, and he wants a federal ban on what he and his allies usually call assault weapons. What is your reaction to that, and what, if any, action should be taken on guns?
Well, it's very interesting that you have members of the Department of Homeland Security that are on the no-fly list, so maybe the president wants to check his own administration first and foremost. Look, there is no doubt that, you know, if someone is legitimately on a no-fly list, they should not be able to purchase a firearm. I own firearms, and I go through, you know, the intense background checks and screening. But it is amazing to me that in the wake of a terrorist attack that happened in San Bernardino, that the president would talk about disarming the American people when they are concerned about their own safety and their security. It'd be the same as after 9/11, President Obama would stand up and say, we're going to ban all airline travel. That's not where we should be heading with this. What we should be doing is looking at the web that is out there of these the Islamic terrorist infiltration, but not just the covert things that are going on, but also the stealth jihad, as I call it, with these front groups that are named in the Muslim Brotherhood Explanatory Memorandum that was uncovered in 2004 in an FBI raid in Northern Virginia. There are many different groups that are out there that are nothing more than front groups for the Muslim Brotherhood that are lobbying and advocating our federal government, one of them being the Council for American Islamic Relations that has an office right there on Capitol Hill. So to try to shift this to a discussion about gun control, common sense gun control, really what they're talking about is disarming the American people. That is part of the rigid, intransigent ideology of President Obama, the liberal progressive socialist left, Hillary Clinton, all of them, instead of focus on what the real issue is, protect American people from Islamic jihadism that is infiltrated into this country.
Last question. It's a little bit of a different take, but it's an issue that came up in the wake of San Bernardino. I read in your biography that you credit your parents for instilling in you a love of God and a love of country. What was your reaction to those who criticized and mocked people for offering their prayers to all those impacted by the terrorist attack last week and often saying that prayers don't work but gun control would?
Again, that shows that you have individuals that don't understand the Judeo-Christian faith heritage of this country. What they would rather do is disarm Americans and make Americans vulnerable to attack and make Americans vulnerable to the coercive nature of government. When you go back and you read some of the quotes of the Founding Fathers on the Second Amendment, it was not just about protecting the American people from any other type of nefarious action. It was about protecting American any type of domestic enemy that would come in. It's about protecting American people from a government as well. And so when you see people attacking prayer, as you have seen Mikey Weinstein of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation going after the Air Force Academy football players because they pray, and he said that that's a putrid example of Christian, supremacy and exceptionalism, there's a problem with the secular humanist left. And I think that they will leverage anything that they can to promote and advance their agenda.
Colonel West, unfortunately, sir, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much, sir, for your service and for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you, and a Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you, sir. Retired U.S. Army Colonel Alan West, he also served as a Republican congressman from Florida. He's now president and CEO at the National Center for Policy Analysis. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.